Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
Yes, so many liberals, so little time. The world just doesn't seem to change, folks. It gets worse and worse all the time. Even when we have Bush liberals, that is, the President of the United States, many people who thought were voting for a conservative or somebody who truly upheld freedom, was babbling yesterday at the at whatever that speech was he was doing, State of the Disunion, I suppose. At any rate, President Bush has decided that he's going to try to privatize Social Security. Of course, he's not going to do a good job of it, and his plan is full of holes, but still it might be better at least to have some of your tax money not confiscated, and if he can get that through, I think that will be a good thing, I suppose, relative to what we have right now. Nevertheless, we're not going to talk about that particular liberalism today. We have other liberal agendas on the plate for this morning, unless, of course, you want to talk about it, and you're welcome, or, you know, in anything like Bush said. You're welcome to call the show at 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. We are also happy to receive your comments and questions by email, and you may send them to questions@policyofliberty.net, questions@policyofliberty.net. Some folks have been inquiring about our webcast as well, and I wanted to mention real quickly that we will be webcasting shortly. We have our technical staff working on getting our webcast up and running. It's taken a little longer than expected, but the link that you see there on policyofliberty.net where it says listen to the show live will be working at some point here soon in the future. So keep going ahead and giving attempts at that. If you want to listen to the show live and you're listening to a recording right now, and you should be able to at some point here in the near future get into that system. We're working on it. In addition to that, we want to encourage all listeners to visit frequently policyofliberty.net. There are new Liberty Minutes programs going to be posted every week, and it's worthwhile to make sure that you're up to date on the latest Liberty Minutes programs, as well as the other recorded broadcasts and information there about the Tyranny Response Network. We're real happy you joined us this morning. This is Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, where we talk about the deep issues of the day, the deep issues of the Christian life, the deep issues of public policy, politics, and so forth, not the superficial stuff you get on other talk radio stations, but instead the deep truths that we can find in God's Word and applied in a meaningful way to daily life and daily living. We also encourage those who are not Christians to listen to the Tyranny Response Network, especially Christian Worldview. And we know out there are many, many folks who are not Christians who listen. And we're appreciative of you being along with us, here along with us. You're more interested in the point of view of liberty that we proclaim here so fervently and strongly. As everyone knows, I'm a pro-life libertarian, and because of that, we don't have too many libertarian voices on the airwaves, and so we have an opportunity, I suppose, to attract a great crowd of people who are interested in free markets, limited government, peace, and an absolute offensive assault against the forces of tyranny which we face in our land today. Well, once again, I want to give you the show phone numbers, 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. You can also send your questions and comments by email to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. We have a couple of interesting emails that have come in overnight. Most of our good comments and questions come by email. And we want to encourage you to do that, by the way. Emailing is a great way to write down your thoughts, get some thinking in a better form than you can just talking on the phone, and have me read those responses or comments on the air and then try to reply to them. You can also find on the webpage, policyofliberty.net, some help if you want to. You're trying to formulate a question about something or comment about something. You can go ahead and read the deep questions file, which was just updated yesterday. with question 18 about slavery, which we'll probably get into today later in the show. And if you read through that list of questions, you're going to find an opportunity to put some things in front of you that will challenge you, that will make you think a little bit about something that you haven't thought about before. Copy that into your email editor and then respond to it. Make your own question or comment based on that, and we can discuss it on the show. It's a good way to get involved with Christian Worldview. We want to also plug this morning the Times Examiner newspaper. The Times Examiner is the upstate South Carolina's conservative, I think they call it the conservative voice of the Palmetto State. You can subscribe to the Times Examiner for only $20 per year. It's a weekly paper that comes out with great columnists, including yours truly, the Tyranny Response Unit, Walter Williams, Thomas Sowell, Phyllis Schlafly, Ben Graydon, and many other great columnists, as well as some that aren't so great. But in any newspaper, you have some neocons mixed in. You can't always get pure things in the world. And after all, I mean, we shine as much more brightly when we're put up next to a columnist by a liberal, at any rate. So we can't really, you know, fault the Times Examiner for throwing a couple liberals or neocons in nearby. But in general, the paper is just fabulous. It's run by a fellow who's sincerely committed to liberty and the truth and debunking the policies of liberals in our day and age. We'd encourage you to pick up a copy of the Times Examiner at 44 Pine Knoll Drive, Suite E2 in Greenville. That's 44 Pine Knoll Drive for those of you who can get by in Greenville and pick up a copy. If they're closed when you're there, you can always put a couple quarters in the machine in the front and pick up your copy out of the rack. So again, a subscription is only $20 per year up through April. I think it's going to $25 in April, maybe on April 1st. You can reach Bob or Laverl by calling 864-268-0576. That's 864-268-0576. Now, the reason we're emphasizing the Times Examiner so much is because my column appears there every week, and some of the deep topics we discuss here on Christian Worldview are indeed available in this Times Examiner and on the website. For those of you who want to review some of the great topics we discuss, including the difference between the state and government, the reason why government aid for tsunami victims is wrong, why we should use marriage covenants instead of marriage licenses, and many other topics, immigration to politics to Social Security and privatization, all of those topics are there and written about. The next month, you'll probably be seeing some topics on there on the lottery, because that's the next planned theme that I'm going to be pursuing. But at any rate, those things are all available on the articles articles menu option under policyofliberty.net. We encourage you to go there and visit and review some of the things which have been written, and then comment to us here on the show. Either send us an email about some of them, as some of you have done in the past, you know, remarking on what the contents of some of those articles, or in some other way, perhaps calling in or helping others or sharing them with others to spread the news, spread the word, the truth about liberty, free markets, and limited government that we espouse so dearly here at the Tyranny Response Network. We're coming up pretty close to a break now. You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network, and this is Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We'll be back in just a minute.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead, make your day.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
Disinfecting the modern mainstream media.
Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
And we're back here disinfecting the modern mainstream media. Thank you for joining us today at Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on the Tyranny Response Network. We have an email here from Brad today, who's phoning, forwarding us an AP news story that says, "Man gets prison time for junk in his yard." In Sanford, Florida, a man who defied officials for more than 13 years by refusing to remove airplane parts and other junk from his yard was sentenced to 3 years in prison. Alan Wayne Davis, 49, had been placed on house arrest in September after serving nearly a year in prison for illegal dumping and creating a maintaining a public nuisance. On Monday, a judge sentenced Davis to 3 years in prison for violations of his house arrest, including failure to return home from work on time and keeping part of a World War II fighter plane in his yard. "Mr. Davis is marching to the beat of his own drum at all times," the judge said. Davis, a mechanic and welder, claims he is the victim of a government conspiracy and that he's merely fighting to protect his property rights. "He was an artist," he insisted, and the pieces of junk were his supplies. But neighbors and officials said Davis's lawn is an eyesore and he's flaunted the law for years. Once, when a judge ordered him to remove the trash, he put it on his roof. Or as you would say here in the South, roof. Now, in the hallway outside the courtroom, his wife, Eileen Davis, said, "This is crazy. This is a victimless crime." By the way, do horses have hoofs or hoofs? Think about that today. Well, this is a very tyrannical thing. Now, we have to agree that this man, Alan Wayne Davis, is probably some kind of a nut in a way. I mean, he's eccentric. He's got trash in his yard, what a lot of people consider trash. But is it appropriate for us as Christians or as those who love liberty to use the force of law to try to force this guy to change his behavior? In other words, we're asking a judge, and who obviously complied, to use a proactive policy to force this man to change his behavior. Well, I'd say no, this is not the proper course of action, because once we allow government the right to dictate what's trash or not, once we allow government to dictate what's okay to do in our lives, the door or the can of worms is open, the door is wide open for them to come in next time and say, "Look, if you happen to have a cross in your yard, it's a violation of what we think is decent and should not be on your front lawn. If you have Christmas lights on, those are indecent and we're not going to allow those. If you have a certain kind of grass in your yard and that doesn't comply with what the federal government environmental policy thinks is correct for grazing chipmunks and squirrels, then we're going to have to use a proactive policy or some sort of legal force to either put you in jail or force you to change." This is a problem, folks. In the free market, you're always going to have people that cause difficulty in life. You're going to have the snake oil salesman who rips people off. You're going to have the occasional bad company. But the idea that somehow using the state is going to cure all that is a myth. We have no reason that we should believe that government solutions are going to provide a better environment, a better system than market solutions will. With a market solution, we'll have a certain quantity of bad products, a certain quantity of bad outcomes. But with government solutions, we are insured to have at least that much or more, if history is any guide. We have no evidence, for instance, that the environment has been any cleaner in socialist countries or countries where they have strong EPA requirements. It may well be that over time, in some countries it may be better, but in most places in the world, whether it's South America or Asia or parts of Eastern Europe, we've seen absolute degradation, dilapidation of the environment on account of what the leftist strategy has been. Government control does not necessarily bring paradise or utopia or anything even close to it. In fact, it could make things far worse than it actually is. And not only that, but once you put bureaucrats in charge of things, their standard becomes the rule forever. And we end up having a situation where we have permanent levels of pollution, permanent levels of disobedience, permanent levels of bad quality products, because bureaucrats have an incentive to maintain their jobs. And if they actually brought us anywhere near utopia, people would begin to say, "Well, why do we need these folks anymore?" And we'd fire them. And if they didn't do a good job, they'd get fired as well if there was no changes made. And so they end up putting us in a range of always being on the edge, right on the margin of what's good or bad. And therefore, we never really get what's great in society. whereas in the market, we actually have an opportunity to achieve that. So the guy with the junk in his yard may have been a nuisance for these folks, but there are other ways to deal with it. Now, some of you say, well, how in the market would you deal with this problem of having junk in somebody's yard that you don't like? Well, there are several ways that you could deal with it, and they're besides force. One is simply to offer the guy some money. I mean, look, if you buy his property from him, maybe it's worth $200,000 down there in Florida, in Sanford, wherever that is. I'm not sure where Sanford is. Is that Sanford all the way down? I think it's all the way down close to Fort Myer or something like that. Well, at any rate, if you offer the fellow enough money, maybe he'll go away sell his house and go move his junk elsewhere, and then you can do what you want with the house. You can sell it to somebody else. So that might be costly. But on the other hand, if you have a neighborhood with 10 people and everybody invests $10,000 or $20,000 for a short period of time, sell the house, get the money recouped, you can get rid of the bad neighbor. Another thing you can do is make sure before you move into an area that you own enough property around you so that you're not molested by the evil activities of other people. In the free market, the way you handle property rights problems is to use the force of economics and buy up the property near you, or when you buy property, make sure that all your property and the property around you has a restrictive covenant on it that prevents certain activities. Then you do have not the force of law in terms of proactive policy, but the force of contract law and the ability to sue and use force based on a man's personal voluntary agreement before moving into a community. Restrictive covenants are the answer to government regulation. In fact, restrictive covenants have been used for many, many hundreds of years. I remember when doing my dissertation research, I read George Washington's restrictive covenant. He put it on his land when he sold it in what was then Virginia. Now it's been commandeered and taken into West Virginia. But he said specifically, look, if you're going to buy some land here out of this thousands of acres that I'm selling, you're going to have to make sure that all your chimneys are made of stone and not wood. Yes, that was an issue in those days. You're going to have to make sure you plant English grass, a certain number of fruit trees, of apple trees, a certain kind of fence. All these things were dictated in the restrictive covenant. And what restrictive covenants do is make the property more valuable to many people, to some people, and less valuable to others. For instance, it gives an indication in the market of how we should build something in an area. So Las Vegas-type developers would go up to the George Washington-style land and realize, this isn't really a good deal. These restrictive covenants are so severe that we'd end up being sued if we tried to put up the dog and pony shows that we do and advertise what we advertise here. So this probably isn't good land for us to buy. And it wouldn't be as valuable to them as places like the Nevada desert, perhaps, where there are no rules at all, or where they might even have regulations that say, if you build here, you have to allow prostitution, gambling, drinking, and all the other things they happen to do in Las Vegas. Well, on the other hand, you may end up finding people who say, I really value this property more that George Washington is selling because I can be guaranteed by contract that things aren't going to go awry here, that I'm always going to see English grass and fruit trees, and I'm going to see horses running here, and I'm not going to have my neighbor's house burned down because he has a wooden chimney and whatever else. So restrictive covenants are the answer, folks. It's not using the state to enact some proactive policy, as is the case of this judge, this power-hungry judge in Florida. So if anybody ever asks you, how do we get rid of problems like this with property rights? One, you buy the property around you, or you get the money necessary from the neighbors to buy out the person that's a nuisance. And secondly, then maybe even a better and more efficient way is to make sure that in the community where you buy things, there are restrictive covenants there that are conducive to your particular values, and that's the answer. Well, we're come up again to another break on the Tyranny and Response Network. This is Dr. John Coben with Christian Worldview. We'll be back in just a minute.
You're listening to TRN.
Tired of superficial and dull talk radio? Try some ear candy for thinking people. Listen to Liberty Minute with Dr. John Coben.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead. Make your day.
Welcome back to the show. We are here making your day. How many of you thought deeply about property rights before? Did you know Christians should be those who respect property rights? Or did you know that it's sad when Christians use the state to attack and violate their neighbor and his property rights by using the state? A lot of times Christians believe that if they have a problem with somebody else, the best solution they have is to go to the government and try to get some policy arranged or some ruling that they can attack their neighbor. This is simply not the right thing to do biblically, especially if you're doing it to another Christian, because that's specifically prohibited in 1 Corinthians chapter 6. But even showing love to the world in the sense of trying to be benevolent to them and show them the benefits of being a Christian, there are things you just don't want to do to antagonize people. And it's far better to use market solutions, voluntary agreements, arrangements that make for peace than hostilities that are going to be caused by this, like this recent case in Florida. So think about that today. As a Christian, you need to support private property rights, but it doesn't mean your private property rights only, but the private property rights of everyone else, even those who you don't like. The same way, folks, in America, we put up with people that don't agree with us. We have to put up with the George Bushes who lie to us. We have to put up with all the other Democrats and Republicans who are leading us astray. We have to allow the homosexual movement, the feminists, the Darwinists, and everyone to have their own opinion and their own free speech, because we want to have that for ourselves. And we believe that we can win enough people's minds just by persuasion that we don't need to resort to force. It's the tool of the left. It's the tool of the non-Christian to resort to force, to push people, to force people to believe something they don't believe in order to try to get what you want out of them. Using the state is not a long-term objective that's sustainable for us or something that we should use. We need to rely on what God has allowed in his common grace through the free market. Well, we have a couple of other interesting stories that have come in here recently. We have some stuff on education, which we're going to be getting to shortly. We also have a couple of interesting points that have come out of different people handing me articles that have come by the Tyranny Response Network or have seen me at lunch. And one of them has to do with a commentary written by a fellow named Christopher Knapp, who was published by the Lozao brothers in the first printing in 1908, called The Kings of Judah and Israel. And he has an interesting comment here that I'd like to read and then comment on in his on page 30 of The Kings of Judah, specifically Rehoboam. He says on page 30 and 31, though truly thankful to God that we are privileged to live under a form of government which gives us fullest freedom, we have no quarrel with absolute monarchy. This is what this guy says. He has no quarrel with absolute monarchy. But while God enjoys subjection to the powers that be, tyranny over the souls and bodies of men is nowhere countenanced in his word, and rulers who attempt it must learn the results to their cost. There are many proofs in this scripture, as in history. Government is of God, and therefore divine appointment, but God's frown is upon all abuse of power. Well, it's interesting that he makes this comment. There's a couple of things that you might have caught in that statement. And the first one that just jumps right out at me is this business about we have no quarrel with absolute monarchy. We are privileged to live under a form of government which gives us fullest freedom, but we have no quarrel with absolute monarchy. Well, you know what, folks? At the Tyranny Response Network, we have a quarrel with absolute monarchy. You know, we're happy that we live in at least the shell or the remnants of a constitutional republic. Because frankly, folks, I would rather live under anarchy, that is, no state whatsoever, than live under an absolute monarchy, especially when we have a wicked ruler, which is the vast, vast majority of the times. Kings are not good, benevolent people. They're evil people that promote wickedness, that promote evil, oppression, suppression, and these sorts of things in the world. And I'm not interested in having that. I think it's a wonderful thing that we have the founding of America and the founding fathers and the opportunity with constitutional government to thrive. And so I think he's completely wrong. Now, I will say he's right on this point, that we have no problem with the fact if God chooses to raise up an absolute monarch, it's God's will, and that's wonderful, that's great. If we have an absolute monarch in that case, That's the way it is, and we need to be content with that. Just as Paul told the Roman citizens and Peter did in the first century. But I'm not going to be seeking for an absolute monarchy or just passively let it come in. My responsibility as a Christian is to try to give us through public policy promote things that will best promote the gospel and the glory of God in the world, and that is probably not going to be an absolute monarch. Now, of course, if I were the absolute monarch, the tyranny response unit, that might be different. In fact, you would probably all enjoy having me as your absolute monarch because I would have a kingdom of freedom for you all. But even then, folks, I wouldn't even trust me. I wouldn't trust anybody with absolute power, although I promise you, if I were given that position and were allowed to survive and not be shot by liberals within the first 24 hours, which is probably the likely outcome, or somebody on the left, life would be a whole lot better. Let's promote, instead of what this guy says, a constitutional republic. It's the best form of government we have in the history of the world, and the one that's worked the best, at least for a short period of time. We had a great country here from 1776, you know, all the way till Lincoln in 1861. Unfortunately and regrettably, this great leftist Lincoln was the guy who began just putting the axe to the root of the tree, at the base of the tree, and he chopped it down mostly, but it was finished off by Wilson and Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And so the great nation of America, the vision of the founders, has been dilapidated, toppled, and is hardly a semblance of what it was when the great people like Thomas Jefferson and George Mason, Patrick Henry, Thomas Paine, Benjamin Franklin, when those men founded the nation. At any rate, we also want to comment on Christopher Knapp's, the rest of his comments, that basically government is of God and therefore divine appointment when God's frown is upon all abuse of power. And he says, tyranny over the souls and bodies of men is nowhere countenanced in his word, and rulers who attempt it must learn the results to their cost. Well, that's an interesting comment for him to make. He's essentially telling us here that if you're going to be a tyrant, you're gonna have to beware. Now, he doesn't actually go right out and say Christians need to be involved in revolution, but he seems to be implying that, and it's rather odd that that he has this sort of dichotomy. It's a typical divine right problem, and I think this fellow is more in the divine right camp, that he doesn't mind having the monarch there, but he's willing to allow for some revolution, but he won't be real specific about how Christians participate. He won't come right out and say, yeah, it's your right to go out there and just remove him. I mean, at least the Christian Reconstructionists and Calvin, they're very, very explicit. If you see the ruler become a covenant breaker, then you just need to find a lower magistrate that's godly. You need to form an army, and you need to go take the guy out. I mean, there's no question that Christians need to take up arms and go and attack the guy. Well, this guy is sort of walking around the fringes here, not being real direct in what he means, and that's, I think, a typical divine right idea. So at any rate, I don't agree with this fellow Knapp, and I think he's making some mistakes here in his thinking, but I think it's very typical of theologians when they try to deal with public policy, they make some statements without really thinking about the full ramifications of them. You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. This is Dr. John Coben with Christian Worldview. We're coming up to our half-hour break, and we'll be back in just a few minutes.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Why is it so difficult for Christians to be good stewards of their finances? We know that God works miracles in people's lives, but he has not chosen to provide manna from above to help us meet our needs as he did with the ancient Israelites. As Christians, we should be leading the way as good stewards. Since we do not spend money on vices like non-Christians do, we should be able to save more. We want to work hard and save our money so that we can have something to give to missions and to the needy. In addition, we want to regularly set aside a portion for retirement. Christians should not have to rely on taxpayer-funded government programs for retirement. No Christian wants to become a burden to their family or church during the ever-lengthening period of old age. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. We are an independent financial planning firm. We specialize in finding creative custom solutions to meet your savings needs. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. As many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a 501c3 listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is, non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NPPros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, PROS as in professionals, your nonprofit professionals, that's NPPros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network. Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a Ph.D. degree in public policy, M.A. degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschool children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
Welcome back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on the Tyranny Response Network. I am the Tyranny Response Unit, and we are here responding against all sorts of tyranny today. There's never a shortage of tyranny in the world, folks. Have you ever noticed that? Have you ever also noticed that revolutions are never legal? If you think you're going to change the world by the political process, you need to think again. Look back in history. Has there ever been a time in American history, forget about the rest of the world for a moment, in American history, has there ever been a time when we've effectively used the political process to make government smaller, to make people freer? It just doesn't happen, folks. The only way we ever become freer, and freedom is always defined as freedom or liberty from the state, is when we have revolution. Now, I'm not preaching revolution. I'm just telling you, beware. If you think you're going to get freer simply by voting right or putting the right people in office, then you're committing the same error and mistake that not only they did under Barry Goldwater and Ronald Reagan in more recent years, but it's been the same thing that has happened to William Jennings Bryan 100 years ago and politicians all the way back to Thomas Jefferson. Remember, Thomas Jefferson said when he returned from France in 1789 that America in 1789 was far different than the America he knew in 1776. And he said during his presidency that he needed a second American Revolution right then because the minds of the people had already turned away from pursuing liberty and the difficulties of maintaining that course in exchange for having security. You can't be secure at the same time and be free, folks, in the sense that you can't pursue government programs, government policies, and a lifestyle of security and still want to be a free people. The price of liberty, the eternal vigilance is the price of freedom, and we can never rest because liberals, leftists, and those who have a socialist mindset are always lurking, always seeking a way to get an inroad into our lives through the state, through the school system, any other means they can to subvert the truths that we hold so dear. Why? Because ideologically they're committed to something else. They believe the collectivist vision. They believe in the New World Order vision. They believe in a vision that we don't share. And to them, their religious principles based on secular humanism or otherwise are so important to them that they're going to go down to the grave trying to make their little stage inroad to their point of view. I believe we have a caller on the. Oh no, okay. We need to. I'm just getting a cue from my producer here that we need to remind you of our phone numbers. And our phone numbers are 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. We'll be happy to receive your phone calls here in Greenville. If you're listening to the show at any other time besides 7:30 to 9 in the morning Eastern time, you're listening to the recorded broadcast. And, of course, we're glad that you're doing so, and we hope that you'll spread the word that this is available to other folks so they'll be able to listen as well. We have already got reports of people listening in other states to the recorded broadcast as background in their office and or their home environment, or their, as a matter of helping up homeschoolers learn something new for the day. We'd encourage you to do that. Don't call during if it's not between 7:30 and 9 Eastern time at 864-201-6955. Instead, 24/7, we do receive comments and questions by email, and you can send those to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. Well, before the break, we've been talking about this one fellow's interpretation of Romans 13 and the state trying to struggle with some of those issues. Someone else had also sent me an interesting commentary by Adam Clark on Romans 13:1 through 7, this which describes, he says, the relationship between rulers and the rule and the rule of law. Of course, this is right. This is one of the premier and most important passages dealing with the nature, or not the nature of the state, but the Christian's responsibility and reaction and response to public policy. Here's what Adam Clark has to say. He says, in all nations of the earth, there is what may be called a constitution, a plan by which particular country or state is governed. The civil governor, whether he be elected or hereditary, agrees to govern according to that constitution. Thus, we may consider that there is a compact and consent between the governor and the governed, and in such case, the potentate may be considered as coming to the supreme authority in the same direct way of God, in a direct way of God's providence. And as civil government is of God, who is the fountain of law, order, and regularity, the civil governor, who administers the laws of a state according to its constitution, is the minister of God. I'm going to pause right there in the middle of his comment and just say this is very strange, and this may be one other reason why theologians ought not to dabble too deeply in public policy, because this is simply not true. Can you imagine Mao Zedong, who murdered 25 million Chinese, be thinking to himself, well, I got here by, you know, this revolution, and I have some sort of a contract with the people that I'm going to govern with according to its constitution, and therefore I'm going to go ahead and slaughter all these people. Folks, when you get tyrants in power, they don't care if there's a constitution. They don't care if they're bound by anything. They do what they want and as they please in an autocratic, totalitarian manner. And this sort of divine right talk, this vision that comes from the revitalized and reshaped divine right of kings movement that is so popular around the world, especially in America among evangelicals, is simply a farce. There may be a few countries in the history of the world where a constitution has been of significance and importance. Especially now, we have some countries that claim to have a constitution that is valid and useful. In Chile, for instance, or supposedly in the United States, in the unwritten constitution of Britain, and maybe other nations of Western Europe. But the vast majority of people, folks, in the history of mankind, especially the last 2,000 years, have suffered oppression and tyranny by the hand of the state. Did you know that the state is the most evil, malicious, dangerous institution that mankind has ever known? In the 20th century alone, there were probably close to 350 million non-combatants, if we trust the data from and the conjecture together with data of Professor Rummel, of the University of Hawaii, 350 million non-combatants were killed by their own governments. That's a lot of people, folks. We're not talking about wars. We're not talking about abortion here. Although those add to the numbers substantially, obviously, we're talking about people that were literally lined up and shot, sent off to Siberia to freeze to death or starve to death in their own lands, whether it be in the Ukraine or elsewhere, by their own governments. They were buried alive in mass holes that became graves. This is the legacy of government just in the 20th century. So if government is so kind to people as that, can't you see how that's become the greatest force, or has been the greatest force of evil in the history of the world? It's undeniable historically. We have had no institution, no event, including the Spanish Inquisition or the other persecutions in the Crusades and so forth, even the Muslim persecutions in more modern era, that even come close to the evil that the state has exposed people to. And so, at any rate, this idea that these people are, you know, governed according to a constitution and they're the minister of God is just, it's just fantasy. It just doesn't happen this way, guys. Folks, take heed when you hear this sort of commentary. Nothing can justify, he continues, the opposition of subjects to a ruler, but the overt attempts on his part to change the constitution or rule contrary to law. What law? Well, this is a big question. I mean, if you're talking about God's law here, the Ten Commandments, you're talking about all the judicial laws of the Old Testament, or are you talking about the law that it creates, the government creates on its own? Are we talking about the Endangered Species Act and the Americans with Disabilities Act here? What in the world is this babbling theologian talking about? I don't know who Adam Clark is. He's probably a really nice guy, and I'm not trying to put him down personally. I'm just making a comment on his statement here. Let me read that again. Nothing can justify opposition of the subjects to the ruler but overt attempts on his part to change the Constitution or to rule contrary to law. Okay, so nothing can justify. Well, let's say that I believe that Sabbath breaking is sin. The Fourth Commandment is still valid. And government needs to enforce that. So let's read that in those terms. Nothing can justify the opposition of subjects to the ruler but an overt attempt on his part to violate the Sabbath or not uphold the Sabbath in the land. Okay, well, I guess that makes sense. So I can just, for any cause that I feel, go ahead and do what I want. Or maybe I have to have a consensus from the church. Or maybe I have to have some consistent position. Well, I wonder what Clark's position is going to be on this. He doesn't really indicate. He's very ambiguous here. Rule contrary to law, whatever that means. He's saying apparently that Christians have the right to have opposition of some sort to the ruler. Now, he doesn't say opposition by force of arms here, and maybe he does not want opposition of force of arms. Maybe he's saying that that's through voting, but it sounds like he's giving Christians the in here to or the option to go ahead and revolt against the state. That's very strange. Every time I read Romans 13 and understand that Nero is the king then, to see how a lot of these divine right folks believe they can get around the pretty clear teaching there that seems to say you have to obey these rulers. Some people will say, well, that's only if it's a decent king, and maybe that's the case, but he doesn't even seem to be going quite that far. He said as soon as that guy doesn't rule according to what you think the law says, you can revolt. I think that's what he's saying. Nothing can justify the opposition of subjects to a ruler but overt attempts on his part to change the Constitution or to rule contrary to law. When a ruler acts thus, he dissolves the compact between him and his people. His authority is no longer binding because illegal, and it is illegal because he is acting contrary to the laws of that Constitution, according to which, on being raised to the supreme power, he has promised to govern. This conduct justifies opposition to his government. So the guy has a contract, and because he's violated the contract, you can go and kill him, remove him, whatever it might be, apparently. Well, okay, I don't necessarily disagree with what he's saying, that we can revolt against the state. But, folks, I'm not sure about his logic here again. How do you determine who gets to decide when the contract's dissolved? Is it just because he says he's not going to privatize Social Security all the way, but only going to do a little bit? This is a little bit too ambiguous for me, this idea of Adam Clark. In addition to that, I'm not sure that we have... Let me read this again. When the ruler thus acts, he dissolves the compact between him and his people. His authority is no longer binding because illegal. Let's start that again. Let's say we're the Apostle Paul, the Apostle Peter, and he's writing. Instead of this commentary, he's writing to the Romans under Nero. When Nero acts thus, he dissolves the compact between Nero and the Roman people. Nero's authority is no longer binding because illegal. And Nero is illegal because Nero is acting contrary to the laws of that constitution, according to which, on being raised to the supreme power, Nero promised to govern. Thus, conduct justifies opposition to Nero's government. That does not sound like what Paul says in Romans 13. Nero was an evil man who broke God's law and was contrary to the law, but yet Paul and Peter don't seem to say that about Nero, unless you're going to say that that's an idealized state of the, like the Theonomists wisely do, try to move that away from the Neroian state. I don't see how you can justify this divine right position of opposing the state in any form. You need to just suck it up, pals, and live under it, it seems to me. Well, at any rate, we're coming up against a short break here. This is Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and you're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. We'll be back in just a minute.
Warning.
Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Why is it so difficult for Christians to be good stewards of their finances? We know that God works miracles in people's lives, but He has not chosen to provide manna from above to help us meet our needs as He did with the ancient Israelites. As Christians, we should be leading the way as good stewards. Since we do not spend money on vices like non-Christians do, we should be able to save more. We want to work hard and save our money so that we can have something to give to missions and to the needy. In addition, we want to regularly set aside a portion for retirement. Christians should not have to rely on taxpayer-funded government programs for retirement. No Christian wants to become a burden to their family or church during the ever-lengthening period of old age. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. We are an independent financial planning firm. We specialize in finding creative custom solutions to meet your savings needs. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead. Make your day.
This same listener we were reading, that he sent this email, and we were reading his email earlier, quoted James Madison in Federalist Number 51, and who said that James Madison recognized that government must be based upon a realistic view of human nature. And here's what James Madison says: "But what is government itself but the greatest of all reflections of human nature, or on human nature? If men were angels, no government would be necessary. If angels were to govern men, neither external nor internal controls on government would be necessary. In framing a government which is to be administered by men over men, the great difficulty lies in this. You must first enable the government to control the governed, and in the next place, oblige it to control itself." Well, this is certainly the great paradox of government. And unfortunately, with the exception of like the American experiment for the first 80 years, it simply has not worked in the history of the world. Constitutions and other things have not been successful in restraining the state from taking too much from its people, from enslaving its people, from causing all sorts of diabolical problems in the world. And so it's not real clear that we can have what James Madison said, but that was the vision of the founders, at least from the Federalist side. The Anti-Federalists were a little less willing to give government as much free rein, seeing that it was just so evil. How could we have wicked men possibly do anything other than be wicked when they were entrusted with government power? Well, at any rate, the whole divine right argument really falls apart on several scores, one of which is they just don't seem to be able to recognize and reconcile well the arguments and the contentions that the Scriptures make in Romans 13 and 1 Peter chapter 2 with the realities of not only Nero, but any other government authority that might want to come up and be in charge. It's just not clear that governments try to rule to maintain peace, that governments or states rise up to actually help people in their lives, promote the common good. These are all fictions. These are all things that are wishful thinking on most folks' part. But the fact is, Christians, if you look at the history of the world, we see states as the greatest enemy of the church, the greatest enemy of liberty, the greatest enemy of people in general. They have not been valiant friends of the faith. And so this idea that there is this implicit constitution that's there that they're trying to uphold is debatable at the outset. But then trying to decide when it's okay to rebel against the state is even more difficult in light of Romans 13 and 1 Peter chapter 2, when these people are trying to make a case for revolution, as this Clark fellow is now. There is no way for anyone to objectively, as an individual, decide, well, it's okay, this guy's broken the compact because he's not stopping abortion. We can go and attack and kill them now. It's not real clear there's any bright line, and the divine writers are not willing to do what the theonomists more consistently do, uphold God's law in the Old Testament as being the standard, the bright line of when you can actually revolt. So right now, every theonomist, for instance, I think, would say, revolting against the U.S. government wouldn't be a bad thing. They've violated God's law. We can do it. We're justified in doing it just on abortion alone, not to mention the many other violations they've done. The divine writers are going to sit over in their corner confused, some arguing, yes, we can, others saying, no, we can't, and never able to come to a consensus of why either position should be taken or not taken. They are a confused lot. It's a confused theology, and unfortunately, folks, it's the theology of public policy of the vast majority of Christians that I run into by default almost nowadays. People accept the divine right position. Well, we have a related question that came up yesterday, and it's question number 18 of the deep questions for Dr. Coben's radio show, and it has to do with slavery. Remember yesterday we read about the fact that 28% of all free blacks who lived in the South owned slaves, whereas only 4.8% of all white people in the South, before 1860, owned slaves. Black people owned other black people, and that is one of these little-known facts of history, because history books have been essentially rewritten by the victors, people that want us to believe that Abraham Lincoln was opposed to slavery and wanted to exalt the black man. We read a quote yesterday from Old Abe in 1864 where he made it very clear that he thought the white race was superior to the black race and that the blacks need to be kept in subjugation, never allowed to vote, never on same social or political equality with white people. He was a racist par excellence, Old Abe Lincoln, and certainly not what the modern history books have led us to believe about this scoundrel. Well, we'd encourage you to go ahead to and take a look at policyofliberty.net, the front page, and read this link where it says deep questions for Dr. Coben's radio show. Think about some of those things, and when you have a response to them or a question about them, send it to questions@policyofliberty.net, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. This show is designed to help you think better, especially as a Christian or for someone who just loves liberty, and we hope we're able to do that by means of this question sheet. We want to remind you again of our phone numbers, which are 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. And again, the email address is questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. We've run over time for a short break. We'll be back in just a minute on the Tyranny Response Network. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Let's consider Christian stewardship in terms of financial planning. Saving, eliminating debt, lessening the burdens that can accompany a serious illness or accident. One of the most important reasons that we acquire life, disability, and long-term care insurance is because we want to love our neighbors as ourselves. After all, what kind of testimony do we give if we actually plan to rely on the charity of others? If we love others, especially our church and family members, we should do careful financial planning. Some Christians have 401k plans that need to be rolled over into a better investment alternative. Still others need to protect their wives and children by purchasing some inexpensive life or health insurance. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service. As an independent financial planning firm with a wide range of products, we're here to help you become a better financial steward. Find out about our many services at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
You know, one of the greatest problems the founders of our great American nation faced was there was a feeling that they were being tyrannized, subjugated, and essentially put into a form of slavery by the English king, and that they were being treated in a way which free people should not be treated, if you read the Declaration of Independence. And a question arose then, and still arises now, as to whether or not slavery is wrong. And whether or not it gives us a right to revolt against any authority when we are enslaved. Well, the scriptures I talk about slavery a fair amount. For one thing, the scriptures in First Corinthians or Galatians 3:28, Ephesians 6:8, Colossians 3:16, the verses mentioned here in question 18 on the deep question sheet available at policyofliberty.net. Say that basically there's no difference between a free man and a slave in terms of being in Christ. You can be a slave and still be a Christian. Paul makes it very clear in that very important passage in 1 Corinthians 7:21. You know, were you saved while a slave? Well, don't worry about it. You can still be in that condition. But if you can be free, do it. If you can be free of slavery, then go ahead and do it. And he also says you were bought with a price, that is by Christ. Do not become slaves of men. We also find Christ making some mention of slavery as if it's an aspect, a fact of life, and the Gospels, Matthew 10:27 and 10:44. Read them at your leisure. But more than that, that it being a regular, you know, usual part of life, as we know it was, about a third of the entire population of the Roman Empire were slaves. We also find that Paul sent back a slave to, in writing to Philemon, we found out that he was sending back Onesimus back to Philemon and saying, look, he ran away from you, and I'm sending him back now, and I just want you to be content with this and not enslave him again. If he owes you anything, then you know I'll pay you back with the Apostle Paul. So he's writing to one Christian saying, don't enslave your brother. Well, that's a very interesting comment. It's not clear whether the slave ran away, and as one view would be, the slave ran away, he came to Paul, helped Paul, became useful to Paul for the ministry, as the letter to Philemon indicates. But then Paul somehow found out that he eventually, you know, maybe in a counseling session, that the guy had run away, and he was actually owned by Philemon. He says, well, I know that guy, you know, and we got to obey the law of the land, and the government says, you know, he's got to be returned, and you're going to have to go back. And I'll write a little letter to help you, but, you know, that, you know, you're going to have to be on your own, pal. If he wants to enslave you again, that's his right, and you need to, you know, stick with it. That's one view, that Paul was obeying the law by sending him back. Another is simply this, that he ran away, became useful to Paul. Paul knew that he'd run away, perhaps all along, that he was a runaway slave. But Paul knew that there was going to be some needs at this particular church, some counsel, some things that needed to be brought there, and he decided to send Philemon as a good messenger. But Onesimus was worried that by the time he got back to the church, there'd be some hassle there because Philemon would try to recapture him and enslave him. And so, you know, Paul wasn't objecting to the fact that Onesimus had run away, but he wanted to help him make sure that this brother wouldn't enslave him again, and so he wrote the letter. So was Paul trying to be a good law-abiding Roman citizen by putting the guy back in slavery, or was he just trying to help the brother who was going to be on this errand not become enslaved again by Philemon? I think it's the latter. You might have your own particular view, but there are two ways you could look at it. Now, there are some other aspects of slavery that need to be considered here on both biblical terms and even in political or public policy terms. And the rest of the question says, you know, it starts out, is slavery wrong? And then those verses, ? Theonomist R.J. Rushdoony provides his thesis that there is a distinction between a slave by nature, quote, a slave by nature and by choice, unquote, particularly, quote, where debt and theft were concerned, unquote. And he references Deuteronomy 23:15-16. Would it have been wrong for a black slave in antebellum, that's before the war between the states or the war of northern aggression, for a black slave in antebellum America to run away from his master? I say no. Other people and Christians say, yes, it would have been wrong. Rushdoony brings up a good point, though. If one of these black slaves were, in fact, enslaved on account of some debt or because of some crime he committed, he voluntarily offered himself into servitude for other reasons, then it would be wrong for him to run away because he has a contract or he's paying for his crimes. But the vast majority of blacks in the South before the war had been kidnapped and forced into involuntary servitude by evil men or by other blacks. Remember, the disproportionate number of blacks owned other blacks, the free blacks in the South, especially the wealthier people of color, blacks in the South in antebellum America. And so I don't think it's ever wrong for a person who's been violated or who's been treated this way to try to rebel and run away. Other people don't agree. Other people figure, well, if a guy takes over and kidnaps you and you can become a slave, don't worry about it. That's God's providence for your life. I don't accept that. I don't see that's what Scripture is teaching. You may differ with me on that, and we welcome, again, your phone calls to 864-201-6955 if you want to rebut. And the question continues, question 18, how would your answer differ if a slave were such A, on account of indentured servitude contract, B, as punishment for a crime, which is what the U.S. Constitution 13th Amendment allows slavery in the United States still under those terms, or C, if the slave were kidnapped and forced into servitude, that is, chattel slavery. I think Rushdoony uses that term, chattel slavery. Well, again, I would say that, I already answered this question to some extent before, if you were kidnapped and forced into chattel slavery, then you have a right to rebel at any time, get away, be free. If you're there under a contract or have indentured servitude, then it's wrong for you to violate your contract, and that slavery is temporary at any rate. And if you're being punished for a crime because of some, you murdered somebody, you raped somebody, you stole something, for a period of time, you are there under that sort of servitude, then you have no right either. The question continues, how does one's view of slavery affect one's view of revolution or disobedience to the state? And then, are Americans slaves of the state? If so, in what sense, voluntarily or involuntarily, and to what extent? Well, I think Americans are slaves to the state involuntarily because we're thrust upon all the time with new extortive taxes, property rules, regulations, things that we have to obey because of proactive policy. But it's not entirely to the extent that a slave as a black man under if he was a slave and not free, in antebellum America. So you can make a case that we are slaves right now, and to the extent that we can make a case that we are involuntarily put into chattel slavery and forced into it in a sense of being kidnapped or commandeered by the state, then I think we do have the right to rebel on the same principle. One's view of slavery does affect one's view of revolution or disobedience to the state. If the state is violating me, if the state becomes my enemy and a criminal in its activity towards me, enslaves me against my will, not because I voluntarily said I was going to be in part of their system, or because I committed a crime, not a political crime, I'm talking about a crime against the law of God, stealing, lying, you know, whatever it might be, clearly a violation of the law of principle found in the scriptures. If it's not one of those things, then I think you can rebel. Now, you may disagree with me. You may think, no, we're enslaved by this state. God gave us this government. We just need to suffer under it. Well, that's fine if you want to make that case, but you need to try to make the case biblically, philosophically, and otherwise in a way that makes sense. We don't want to hear just a bunch of gibberish about Paul says submit. My Bible says submit, brother. Obey those that are in authority over you. It doesn't matter if I've been kidnapped and put into slavery. That is not an acceptable answer because it's not clear in the scriptures that Paul is teaching an unqualified submission to the government. I'm sorry, but they themselves disobeyed the state at times. They were told to preach the gospel, to stop preaching the gospel, and they refused. Daniel refused to bow down to the golden idol. And there are other examples of disobedience in the Bible. Look about Ehud and Eglon. I mean, that guy went in there and lied, got past the front guards, and stabbed the guy. I mean, you're talking about violent disobedience there, and it is condoned in the scriptures as something that is good as far as we can tell. Well, think about it, folks. You do not have, you can't use that as some simple platitude. Well, whatever they thrust upon me, taxes or regulation, I need to comply. If it's a bald eagle requirement or a beachfront property requirement or the drug laws or the income tax, whatever it might be, I need to just comply. If I don't, then I'd be in sin. And brother, you're in sin. Don't get sanctimonious with us. You're not being reasonable, logical, or conforming yourselves to the Word of God when you come up with that kind of logic. It's a myth of the divine right school. It's a head-in-the-sand sort of approach, and it does not deal with the realities of our own culture and system. We do not have a slave system that, like the Roman Empire had a slave system, but we still have aspects of slavery that we deal with on a daily basis. When the government takes away half of your income and forces you to work for them effectively for half of the year, I call that slavery. When it forces you to go serve in their army and fight its phony wars through a draft, I call that slavery. There are aspects of slavery that we face nowadays that we need scriptural thinking and scriptural solutions and thinking Christians to come up with a proper response to public policy. And I think that the divine right view detracts from that, does not help whatsoever. Liberty of conscience view, of course, would allow a person to make his own decision of when to violate, or when he's being violated, and when he can rebel and revolt. And I would not judge a man if he does anything on principle. The Christian Reconstructionists, I think, are very clear in how they would handle this sort of enslavement by the wicked state, and they don't have a problem with revolution, and that's why those two schools fought side by side in our war for independence against the king, and why they fought side by side in the Second American Revolution when we tried to save the nation from the tyranny of Lincoln and his cohort. And they would fight side by side again. And the rest of you can snicker on the sideline all you want who believe, oh, we've just got to obey whatever they say, whatever they send our way. But I don't believe you'd be honoring God or glorifying God with that sort of position. Now, if you disagree, please do give us a call at 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. We're a little bit late coming up for our break here, folks, and it's a long break. We'll be back in a few minutes on the Tyranny Response Network.
You're listening to TRN.
Disinfecting the Modern Mainstream Media, Christian Worldview, with Dr. John Coben.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net, that's www.policyofliberty.net on the web,
You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain. Welcome to the Libertarian Perspective with Chuck Fields.
The Patriots of Fort Trumbull, an article from the publication of the Institute for Justice by Scott Bullock on the web at www.ij.org. When I first pulled into London, Connecticut that summer evening in 2000 to investigate a potential case, I knew the situation had promised to turn into an important lawsuit. Little did I know, however, that my first meeting with the homeowners and their community supporters would snowball into a case now before the U.S. Supreme Court that could shape constitutional law for decades. I went to New London because of a letter I received from a local activist about the abuse of eminent domain in the Fort Trumbull neighborhood. The letter attracted IJ's interest because it contained the three elements we always look for in our cases: an important cutting-edge constitutional issue, a dedicated group of people willing to stand up for their rights, and an outrageous violation of individual liberty at the hands of arrogant government officials. My visit solidly confirmed our initial impressions. Governments typically abuse eminent domain in one of two ways: by stretching the definition of blight laws to absurd degrees, or by jettisoning the blight rationale altogether and using eminent domain simply to generate more tax revenue. That latter manner was at issue in New London. The city did not rely on blight laws, but rather claimed it wanted to take this non-blighted, middle-class neighborhood because the new owners could possibly create more taxes for the city than the current homeowners. We were determined to challenge this most expansive definition of eminent domain yet conceived, hopefully all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, which had never ruled on the issue. After carefully reviewing the legal issues, we concluded that the New London case provided an excellent opportunity to challenge this type of abuse. During my first meeting with the owners in Suzette Kilo's beautifully restored pink Victorian cottage, I knew that this was a brave and principled group of individuals who would make perfect IJ clients. They had endured so much already and had been told by so many that they had no hope of prevailing. And yet, they still soldiered on. Over the years, the homeowners have not only been clients, but they have become friends of mine and to the many other folks at IJ who are part of the New London team. They are modern-day patriots. Not only were the legal issues in this case compelling and the homeowners resolute, the actions of local officials were ruthless. The city had given its eminent domain authority to a private body, the New London Development Corporation, and that group proceeded to threaten and then exercise its authority without concern for constitutional rights. This despite the fact that the NLDC already had dozens of acres of land available for development, and our clients' homes constitute less than 2 acres of a 90-acre development area. The NLDC also engaged in psychological warfare against the homeowners. As soon as the NLDC obtained a property, it tore it down as quickly as possible, a not-so-subtle message to the remaining homeowners that their home would be next. At the time we filed suit, the NLDC was led by Claire Godiani, the former president of Connecticut College, and almost a parody of a condescending collectivist academic who justified her attempts to remove our clients from their homes as the pursuit of social justice. These people had to be stopped. The battle to save Fort Trumbull has been long and very hard fought, with many ups and downs along the way. We won for most of the homeowners in the trial court, only to have the Connecticut Supreme Court rule in favor of the government by a 4-3 margin, setting up our petition to the U.S. Supreme Court. At IJ, though, we are fond of quoting American Revolutionary Tom Paine, who wrote, "Tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered. Yet we have this consolation with us, that the harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph. We still must triumph at the U.S. Supreme Court, but we and the property owners know that we have fought a good and necessary battle against despotism, and we now stand poised to protect the rights of home and small business owners throughout the nation. Scott Bullock is an Institute for Justice, or IJ, senior attorney. Their website is www.ij.org.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a Ph.D. degree in public policy, M.A. degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
Welcome back to the show. Thank you for listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We're really hoping that some of you will call in today. In fact, our production staff just said that we have an offer at the Tyranny Response Network that the eighth caller will receive $1 million. So go ahead and fill up the phone lines here and give us a call. We do realize that the Tyranny Response Network, that a lot of folks have said to us, look, we are so captivated by listening to this show and so enjoying of it that we just feel like we can't call and we don't want to interrupt what's happening. But folks, we want to be interactive with folks, with people. This is not just a lecture format. We don't want to get to the point where we're just a lecture format. So if you're waiting to call, thinking, look, you know, if we call, we're not going to hear something, or we're going to interrupt the reading of something. Don't worry about it. We're happy to have you call and interact. And obviously, if you don't call, we're going to have to continue with the different stories and so forth that we have, because we have to continue with the show. So. But please don't let it deter you from calling. The fact that I'm in the midst of reading something, we'll be happy to put you on the air. Please do call the show. We had a couple of emails come in, or people drop off things with me regarding public education. Now, some of you might know that I'm not a fan of the government school. In fact, I look at the government school as our greatest enemy in the United States of America. As much as I detest the IRS and its abuses, as well as the Federal Reserve System and its phony, fraudulent money system. And those are great evils and terrible evils. In fact, not far behind the public school, I think nothing has done more damage to American culture, way of thinking, and ideology than the government school indoctrination program. We read a little bit about it yesterday, that even in the government schools today, people or kids coming up think that Americans have too many rights and that the First Amendment is just not very important or been overstated. What a travesty that not only of justice and reality, but that the next generation has been so indoctrinated with the ways of the left and secular humanists that we are starting to erode freedoms, or we are eroding freedoms even more and faster. Well, at any rate, someone dropped off an article from J. Gresham Machen, a very famous Presbyterian, one who started the Orthodox Presbyterian Church when Princeton Seminary went liberal in the mid-1920s. J. Gresham Machen was very opposed to the public school or the government school. I'll just read a couple of quotes from this, and then I want to hop to another article that was sent in, or a piece that was sent in by another listener. Greg sent this in, and just quoting from it, it says, "If liberty is not maintained with regard to education," Machen says, "there is no excuse trying to maintain it in any other sphere. If you give the bureaucrats the children, you might as well give them everything else. That is the reason why I think that every one of us ought to be opposed with all his might and main to the sinister legislative measure that we have been considering today. We do not want a federal Department of Education, and we do not want in any form whatever the slavery that a federal Department of Education would bring." Well, I just really like J. Gresham Machen. I couldn't have said it any better myself, and I've always liked to be able to stand on the shoulders of giants like him. it is indeed a slavery. And we've just talked about slavery. Can you revolt, divine right, or think about it real hard? I'd say yes, we can go ahead and revolt for any of these things, because if we give them the children, like Machen says, you might as well give them everything else. And we have given them the children, and they have gotten everything else too, by the way. Machen is very prophetic. He was writing in the mid-1930s, I believe, when he was talking about some of the issues of, I think he was testifying regarding the Federal Department of Education that was proposed. At any rate, Machen talks about, he says, to say to a child, do not tell a lie because you're an American, is at bottom an immoral thing. The right thing to say is, do not tell a lie because it is wrong to tell a lie. And I do not think that is unconstitutional intrusion of religion into the public schools for a teacher to say that. Well, you may not think so, Machen, but guess what? They sure do at the public school, I'll tell you that. They do not encourage any law-abiding as far as what God considers as law-abiding. In fact, you'll find everything from homosexuality and promiscuity there to reasons why we don't need to even be free anymore. He says that patriotism and morality cannot be mixed. If you divorce truth and morality from the Bible and try to put it into a secular era, you are not going to get anywhere. The public school is going to fail at being a moral guide, which has absolutely been the case, has it not, over the last 70 years? And we will end up with a complete debilitation of people's minds, morals, and society itself. Machen was absolutely right, and I appreciate his comments about the slavery that the Department of Education would bring, and that we don't want the Department of Education. Reagan tried to eliminate it once, to his credit, and of course he was shot shortly thereafter. The education establishment is a very powerful institution. They hate anything that would attack their way of life and their philosophy, because they realize that is the key piece in their plank of trying to establish leftist liberal principles in the United States of America. We are opposed to the public education or government school system here at the Tyranny Response Network precisely because it is so sinister. Well, something more up-to-date, we have Educational Choice, an innovative report, July 9th, 1990, being resurrected by one of our listeners who sent this in just recently to us. Juliet sent this just recently to us. And Juliet says, here are some of the requirements that were set forth in 1971. And we're going to read a little bit about some of this. She's pointing, or the report points out some things of Milton Friedman and elsewhere, otherwise. And I think this is very interesting, because eventually they start criticizing homeschools as well. Beware, folks. Don't get caught in the trap that it's good for homeschooling to get vouchers or any kind of government support. You'll see why in a minute. His protege, I'm jumping into the middle of this article, his protege, Keynesian economist Milton Friedman, well, Milton Friedman's not a Keynesian, that's a mistake. At any rate, began in 1960 to promote the voucher plan. He was a monetarist, for all of you who don't know that. The voucher plan, the first unsuccessfully in his Alm Rock experiment. And in 1970, he wrote Free to Choose, and in July 1980, the first global conference in the future was held in Toronto, Canada. One of its prime objectives was to push education choice on unsuspecting American, Canadian, European citizenry. Some of the participants were Edward Cornish from the World Future Society, Aurelio Pici from the Club of Rome, R.T. Francoeur from the Aquarian Cabal, Miriam and Edward Kelly, National Institute of Mental Health, Dorothy McLean from the Findhorn Foundation, Barbara Marx Hubbard from who's a prominent New Ager, Mark Staten or Satin, I suppose it is, an anarchist, Mark Satin, an anarchist, a Green Revolution activist, Marilyn Ferguson, the world's leading New Ager at the time, Maureen Murdoch, an occultist, Moshe Davidovitz, an American Association for Humanistic Psychology, and many others. What a great motley crew to have deciding our children's future, huh? Well, it sounds like they won the day, because those are precisely the kinds of people that are deciding the future of thinking of Christian or kids in the government school system. Then in 1981, the American Legislative Education Council, formed by Paul Weyrich, we are radicals who want to change the way existing power structure, we are not conservatives, is what he said, mailed to 16,600 state and federal officials and legislatures and suggested an educational voucher. Thomas A. Shannon, executive director of the National School Boards Association, said, tuition tax credits for private schools profoundly change the character of private education. Private schools that operate with public money will be subject to public regulations. Very true. Well said. Sure enough, concurrently, on July 18th, 1971,
key federal regulation underlying and controlling any subsequent education legislation was adopted. The master control system, the interagency daycare standards, hinged upon, what was that? That was somebody getting in the line trying to promote public education over the tyranny response unit. We will dominate, though, on this station. You will not have a voice for your tyranny here. The interagency daycare standards hinged upon the federal government's own definition of daycare. Daycare is defined as the care of a child on a regular basis by someone other than the child's parents or for any part of the 24-hour day. It states that any agency, public or private, which receives federal funds directly or indirectly through a grant or contract or by way of a voucher plan must meet all programs that are set down for public schools. I suppose that would mean alternative lifestyles, environmentalist agendas, and other things. The chronology or evolution of events has, by law, now placed the standards guidelines within state agencies. It has linked increased school costs and unasked-for, unwanted, yet mandatory programs through backdoor administrative guidance policies and procedures and without the knowledge or involvement of elected representatives to the federal requirements as conditions of funding. These mandatory programs include sex education, psychological services, organizational changes, human relations activities, whatever that means, you can only guess, busing, bilingual education, etc. In March 1984, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that private schools are subject to government regulations because they enroll students who receive tuition money from the government, even though the checks are payable to the individual students, not the school. The court says that scholarships, loans, grants to students constitute federal financial assistance. Continuing in the same direction, on January 28, 1988, the U.S. Senate passed the Civil Rights Restoration Act, which extends the reach of the civil rights measures that were limited by the 1984 Supreme Court ruling. The legislation makes it clear that the entire institution must not discriminate if a component receives federal aid. On April 28, 1988, the Hawkins-Stafford Elementary and Secondary School Improvement Amendments of 1988, commonly known as H.R. 5, Amending and Reauthorizing the Elementary and Secondary Education Act of 1965, became law. It contains a bypass provision which allows the Secretary of Education to circumvent any state law in order to assist in the education of any child who lives in any school district. The reasoning is that all local school districts receive federal financial aid, so therefore all children who live in those districts must be allowed to participate in the services, purposes, and benefits of this bill if they receive any kind of government subsidy. Not only can the Secretary bypass any existing state laws or agencies unwilling to provide for such participation, he may make any regulations necessary to ensure compliance, consulting with no one in emergency situations. The bill specifically includes home-based and residential schools. The government intends to restructure total educational environment at the level of the individual school, and H.R. 5 provides funds to develop innovative approaches for surmounting barriers that make the programs difficult to administer. Educational choice by whatever name, tuition, tax credit, voucher, open enrollment, opportunity grant, etc., is that innovative approach. Now, I've already read a lot in this. I'm not going to read any more of it. You've got the point, folks. What the government says is essentially this. The Department of Education has autocratic control over your lives and the lives of your children if they give you money in any way, shape, or form, whether it's through a voucher, whether it's relief on the property tax, whether it's some kind of loan that's given to a student, not even written out to the school name or the homeschool's name. If it's written to the kid in any way, the kid gets some money, we suffer because they are able to come in and control the agenda. They're able to force upon us Darwinism, secular humanism, leftist perspectives, anti-liberty perspective or slavery perspectives. They are able to force on us all their wicked agenda, and we have no say in the matter any longer, and the state laws will no longer be valid because the Department of Education will be able to usurp anything just on the basis that we're getting funding. Don't let our homeschools go down to defeat because we want to sell out for a pottage, pot of stew or a mess of stew like Esau did. It ain't worth the money. Yeah, it'd be nice to save $1,000 a year on property tax and not go have it go to the evil government school. I agree. Defunding the public school, the government school, is a great priority to have, and I'd love to be participant in it. But if it means I've got to lose the kids and they get to control what's said in the homeschool, then it's not okay. It ain't worth the $1,000 savings, as much as I'd like to have it. Listen, I need the $1,000 as much as the rest of you do out there. But look, we do not need to have government controlling our homeschooling. Don't get involved with these acts, these tempting little acts of trying to get parents involved or trying to get us a voucher or anything else that gets them in the door, a foot in the door. I'd love to have the money. I think it's unjust and wicked that they steal it from us to pay for something as hideous as a government school, but it's just not worth the cost, folks, if they can come in by me getting any credit for that and have them subvert the homeschool and subvert the environment of even the Christian school, as they apparently have already done. Well, there's my soapbox for the moment. We're coming up against a real short break, and then we're going to be back for the last couple minutes of Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
You're listening to TRN.
Tired of superficial and dull talk radio? Try some ear candy for thinking people. Listen to Liberty Minute with Dr. John Coben.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
The Tyranny Response Network, helping Americans resist temptation and error by repudiating the foxy blather of the talking heads in the neocon media.
This is Dr. John Coben. That's a great spot. We like that. We like our production crew. We thank them for being able to come up with those great, great spots for us during the show and throughout the day. We want to thank you for listening to Christian Worldview today. We're coming up towards the end of the show. I just want to remind you that we are a listener-supported program, and we need people right now to support us in our efforts here. It's a largely volunteer staff with donated equipment in many regards. We don't have a large capital base to operate with, but we'd appreciate your support. And if you simply send us an email to questions@policyofliberty.net or even call the show phone and tell the producer at 864-201-6955 that you're just calling to talk about support and how you might even contribute a small amount towards the progress of this show, we would greatly appreciate it. If you want to support Liberty, if you want to support the only voice in Greenville, and one of the only voices on the Internet as we get and expand that far, those who respond against tyranny and tell the truth, please support the show. There are dollars well spent, and it's something we could really really use at this time in the advancement of the cause for liberty and truth. We've covered a lot of deep thinking subjects today. We appreciate your attentiveness as we talked about the government school. We've talked about slavery from a biblical and political liberty perspective, whether revolution is okay in the case of one being enslaved. We've mentioned to you a number of other current events that have gone on and things that are important to the Christian worldview, and we appreciate your attentive. We've hoped that today's show has helped you think better as a Christian, so that Christians can begin cast off the shackles that are binding them, and they will not be the gullible people that they seem to have been when they've currently elected George W. Bush, and instead will turn to a true right-wing position or libertarian, pro-life libertarian, true paleo-conservative, whatever you want to call it, position that rejects these halfway houses of pragmatisms and gets us more of the same, more shackles, less liberty, fewer rights than we've had before. We need folks to be able to stand firm for the truth, and this is the radio station that's going to help you do that. Again, thank you so much for listening to Christian Worldview today. We'll be back again tomorrow for the end of the fourth week in the Tyranny Response Network of Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Be sure to tell all your friends to tune in to 97.7 FM in the mornings and participate in the show. Thanks again for listening. This is Dr. John Coben with Christian Worldview signing off for today. God bless you.
You've been listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on TRN. Join us again tomorrow morning right here at 97.7 FM on the Tyranny Response Network for Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.